Welcome to the HR Locker podcast. On today's show, we welcome back Katie Ridge, Head of Employer Relations at Adair Human Resource Management. With changes and restrictions underway and many people returning to the workplace, we ask Katie some topical questions around remote and flexible working, such as contracts of employment, do you need to update them if you are facilitating flexible working? And do employers have the rights to refuse full-time remote working? Also up today, we have seen some reports from companies talking about reducing salaries of full-time remote workers. Katie gives us the legal perspective of where employers stand. And lastly, the Great Resignation. Katie talks to us about the recent results of the Barometer report and how we are currently living in an employee market. As usual, Katie brings us up to date on all the legal standpoints on these current HR questions. Don't forget, if you have any questions or topics that you would like us to cover, get in touch at marketing@hrlocker.com. We hope you enjoy the show.
Today, we're delighted to have Katie Ridge with us from Adair HRM. So thank you, Katie, for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
So we have a number of questions that we'll be going through today, specifically around some of the legal requirements coming, I suppose, out of lockdown. So, with companies reopening offices and trying to get that balance between remote working and opening offices, and some people coming back full time to the office, some people looking at that hybrid flexible model, and really focusing on, I suppose, what are the legal requirements or implications from an employer perspective. So Katie, I suppose one of the main things, if you're changing someone's main place of work, so say, for example, you're going to maybe a permanent remote working way of working, so they're not their place of work is no longer the office, what changes, if any, need to be made to their contract of employment?
Yeah, thanks, Crystal. That's a very topical question with the movement, I suppose, that's associated just in the broadest sense around the COVID pandemic. If we take the focus of the question, which is really the terms and conditions of employment contracts, I suppose the ones that are most impacted as a consequence of the COVID-19 pandemic, they probably relate to remuneration, working hours, and the location of where the work is done. And I suppose in that regard, changes to the terms and conditions of an employee's contract, they could occur with the employee's consent, they could occur without the employee's consent, but there's a reliance on a contractual provision in the agreement between the worker and the employer organisation. And usually that is done by way of a variation clause or a mobility clause. So allowing the employer a bit of flexibility around perhaps a range of locations or the place of work changing on the back of certain events happening. And I'll speak to that a little bit more detail in a moment. But obviously, there could be a change without the employee's consent or without the variation clause. And that third one is definitely the more problematic of the three, if you like, choices, as it were, that are available to employers. So when we're talking about the terms and conditions of employment contracts, that brings in, as a matter of course, the two pieces of legislation, which is the Terms of Employment Information Acts. And then that piece of information was updated in 2018 by the Employment Miscellaneous Provisions Act. So together, both of those articulate that employers must provide staff with certain written terms and conditions no later than 2 months after they have commenced employment. So the inference is anybody who's in employment for that period of time should have had the terms and conditions of their employment provided to them. So if we talk then in terms of the simple one is where your employer asks you to relocate and you are happy to do that. Maybe it suits you geographically or whatever, then there is a consensual variation and that is fine and it's something that is working for both parties. Mostly what happens in this space is around a variation or a mobility clause. So this is where ahead of time, the employer has this explicit term in the contract that allows them that degree of flexibility in certain maybe precise or imprecise circumstances. And I suppose where that is there, they're entitled to rely on it. And where it isn't there, it really is a unilateral change. And that's where the problems start for employers. If there was a unilateral change, if an employee really wanted to push that against that issue, they may go to the courts to have the right of the employer to do that determined. So really, the optimum facility in terms of key changes to an employee's contract, which for most people are driven by, in the recent past, the pandemic, they need to look and be assured that they have this variation or mobility clause facility available to them. And if they have that, then they can rely on it. So another thing to consider is that if an employer needs to relocate or transfer an entire business or part of the business to another location, and this clearly can be an issue that can arise in a variety of circumstances, including COVID. It is arguable in those circumstances that the employer might be justified in dismissing the employee in question by reason of redundancy. And that is obviously in terms of the person resisting moving to the new location, because it is provided for under the Redundancy Payments Acts that a redundancy arises in a number of circumstances, but one of those circumstances is the employer has ceased or intends to cease to carry on the business in the place where the employee was employed. So that's something to also be mindful of. And another thing to be mindful of is if there is a consensual variation in any of the terms of an employment contract, then that change should be recorded. So there should be an amendment to the contract, and that should happen within 1 month of the parties agreeing to that change. So they're simple steps, but a couple of steps there to keep an employer on the right track in ease of this situation arising.
So I think you've answered both of my follow-up questions there. Is number one, if I close my offices and now go 100% remote, one of my employees won't accept that, I am possibly looking at some kind of redundancy.
Well, there is certainly the prospect of that significant change, yeah, fitting under one of the definitions of a genuine redundancy. Yes.
Yeah. Yes. And then my next question is, so then if in regards to that contract amendment, if we are going down to the, remote working, maybe a hybrid policy or whatever it is, do I need to be issuing new contracts, or it's okay just to put in that amendment?
I think for most employers, it's putting in the amending term. Obviously, you know, the more consultation you can have about something as fundamental as a change of location or some of those other significant kind of bread and butter issues for people, the better, because we're also interested in sustaining morale. So rather than imposing, it's always better to have some form of consultation. But clearly, if the ultimate decision is going to be that there has to be a change in the geographical location, for example, of where somebody carries out their work, and there possibly is no other option for the business, then that term, that variation that the parties ultimately agree on and sign up to, that should be recorded in the agreement, and it can be put in by way of an amending term. So there isn't a requirement to start issuing a whole new contract for everybody. Yeah.
And I think that's key, is the communication around it, isn't it? You know,
well, it is, because I think all these things come back to the reasonableness of the matter. And, you know, most people will recognize when the situation is laid out in front of them they will recognize the constraints or the needs of the business. And again, the other point is that for many of the COVID-related changes, they are being predicated on the basis of this, in some instances, being a temporary arrangement. So that facility should also be used where it's appropriate for a relevant organization. They may want to have remote working as the arrangement for a 12-month or some other time period, and that can be stipulated in the amending term.
Yeah, no, that's great. Katie, my next question really is around, you know, we've seen this, the government has have been pushing this right to request remote and flexible working. And I do always like to push that request word. It's not the right to be granted it. So we've had a lot of questions, and I'm sure you guys have been asked these questions before, Katie, is as an employer, can I refuse the right to work remotely? Can I refuse the right for my employees to work remotely? From a legal standpoint, can I make them come back to the office?
So I think, again, you've touched on the context of this question. So as you're aware, the National Remote Work Strategy, this sets out the roadmap for employers and employees. And there is no detail as yet. It was promised for quarter three, but I think events have overtaken us in terms of other matters that have been given priority. But there still is no detail in the strategy in terms of the proposed obligations on employers to consider that type of a request and indeed to grant that type of an ask. There is currently no legislative framework in relation to this right, as you say, to request that I could work remotely. So in terms of the employer being able to refuse, because there isn't a right enshrined, they're not effectively inhibited in making that decision. So currently, in terms of employment law compliance, the employer is entitled to decide on the location of an employee's place of work. The only caveat there would be the COVID-19 protocol for employers and workers. So obviously taking into account the ever-changing public health guidelines. But in terms of the legal ramifications, the employer, until we have legislation to the contrary, in terms of employment law compliance, the organisation are entitled to determine the place of work.
I think it kind of comes down to that communication, which I know we're using as an overused word at the moment. But, you know, if somebody's requesting that remote working or flexible working, whatever it is, you know, to ask your employee, you know, why or how can you feasibly do it? But then sometimes I think we kind of forget that some jobs just can't be done remotely or can't be done flexibly. And, you know, an employer at the end of the day still has to do business.
Yeah, and it is each case on its own merits. There will very definitely be activities, as you say, that one couldn't feasibly deliver the service or make the product other than being on site. There are other activities which, again, clearly remote working has demonstrated can work successfully. So we're back to reasonableness in terms of for many organisations, it's working out as a hybrid arrangement whereby the, for example, if there is a 5-day week, that maybe 3 of the days are on a rota basis, again, depending on the staff levels and going back to the protocol. So in ease of social distancing and working to that requirement, there may be rotated presence in the office and then everybody having days whereby they can work remotely. And that might be less time in the office as a consequence of there being a bigger workforce. And so you're limited in the turnover of who can physically come in. Or it may be determined until we get into a maybe more constant space with COVID that the employer is simply deciding that the the working remotely continues, possibly with exceptions for particular activities that require people to use plant tools or equipment on site that aren't transferable to a remote working location. But as of today, and we obviously got updates, everybody was looking expectantly in relation to October 22nd. So as we speak today, the public health guidelines remain that workers should work from home unless it's necessary to attend in person. And so the obligation is on employers and workers indeed to follow this guidance until it changes.
Yeah, and we can't see into the future, but presumably even if it changes in the next few weeks or months, there's still going to be that social distancing guideline. So you're probably still going to be looking at some kind of rostered system. Katie, one of the things that we've seen in a few of the larger American firms and some of the banks and some of the social media firms is in regards to now that people are working from home or may not be working in the big city environments, we've seen them kind of threatening to reduce people's salaries or kind of a pushback on that side of things. If you're not in New York, you don't get New York salaries if you're working from home. From a legal perspective, can you do that in Ireland?
Well, I think we've two things to bear in mind here. So as we've just remarked on, the public health guidance is that people must continue to work from home where appropriate. And the only exceptions should be precisely that, exceptional circumstances. So one would have to construe from that in terms of priorities, the public health requirement of citizens of the country is to adhere to that guidance. You have that then aligned with remuneration, which is a fundamental term in any employment contract. So it goes back to the general principles of a contract that the terms, and particularly where they're fundamental or lifeblood terms of a contract, that they cannot be altered without the agreement of both parties. So any unilateral change, so this is where an employer would simply make the decision that they're going to reduce somebody's remuneration as a consequence of that person working from home, would be problematic in the extreme. It would also, importantly, lay the employer open to challenges in relation to the Payment of Wages Act, or it could be levelled at an employer that an employee found that they were constructively dismissed as a consequence because they in good faith took a job for X amount per annum, and with no agreement on their behalf, they then find that figure has been unilaterally reduced. And so they could legitimately argue that they had no option but to leave their employment. And of course, that's a constructive dismissal claim, and they would seek compensation for that in the appropriate forum. So it's highly problematic, and it also impacts, because we're not just into short-term measures here, and we've learned that particularly about COVID. It's really important for employers to be focusing on the employment relationship. Something like that irreparably damages the employment relationship. So I think it's a poor move in terms of any value even being attained from it. Not advisable.
Yeah, and I would say, Katie, as well, I wonder, does it leave a company open to discrimination as well? Because then you're outwardly discriminating against people who are working from home.
Well, I mean, it's certainly, regardless of whether I would be able to show a particular characteristic in terms of gender, disability, or any other factor that, you know, was relevant to me as somebody who was working from home, maybe family status, yeah, would be an obvious one, that would just be an additional complaint that could be levied. But yeah, in terms of the universality of workers, there is nothing in the Payment of Wages Act that allows an employer to interfere with an employee's salary without the agreement of the employee. The only circumstances that is provided for are lawful deductions, which are deductions to the revenue, or deductions that have been agreed maybe in respect of a health premium, or perhaps if there is a deduction required as an order of a court, for example, for a maintenance order or something along those lines. But the Act is very clear that interfering with employees' net or gross salary is not permitted other than in those explicit circumstances. So I think that on two fronts, universally, employers are going to come up against the wrong end of that Act, and they're also going to come up against the wrong end of a constructive dismissal claim. And then depending on who the injured party is, there could, of course, be equality issues that they will also plead. So in short, it's a misguided, I would believe, a misguided step on behalf of employers. And it's really very short term. It's not contemplating the significance of the employment relationship and the reliance that both parties need to place on that.
And I was just about to say the same thing, Katie. It is in terms of what kind of relationship are you expecting with your employees after that?
Exactly. And, you know, we have seen, even as COVID continues, huge movement in the market, and people have reordered their priorities in terms of what's important to them vis-a-vis where they elect to work. And we know anecdotally, and we know from barometer research within HR and the world of work, that what's important to people is work-life balance and being recognised in terms of the needs that they have, while, of course, carrying out the duties that they have under the employment contract. So definitely, it's an employees' marketplace at the moment. And so that's another factor, that I suppose, that in the practical sense, that should be kept to the fore.
Yeah, and I think that can be applied to all the questions that we've gone through, Katie, in terms of that it is an employees' market.
It is, absolutely, yes. And, you know, employees now are going for interviews for positions, knowing that they have maybe two offers already. Mm-hmm. And literally then sitting down and working out what is the best fit for them. And as a consequence of COVID and probably reflective thinking that many workers have done, you know, they're weighing up very carefully the attributes of prospective employers and the culture in those organizations. So they are important features for most employees if they're looking to make a career move.
Yeah, and we were talking earlier, Katie, about, you know, regardless of, you know, whether you're going to be working remotely or flexibly, or whatever it is, over the last year and a half, I suppose your mental model in terms of work has changed somewhat in terms of what we accept. You know, like, I drop the kids to school at 9 o'clock in the morning now, whereas previously I was kind of getting them ready to go to preschool for half eight, and, you know, it was a real big deal. Whereas now, you know, I'm able to talk up and say, look, I'm dropping them at 9 o'clock. I'll be in for 5 past.
Yeah, I think that there is a more practical recognition of the asks that are on employees. And of course, people who are in management positions and the CEO and everybody have some familial setups. So it's something that everybody can relate to. But I think that there's a more realistic buy-in in terms of the requirements, and there's a recognition that where people are facilitated to carry out those responsibilities, that they are happy to give back in terms of the amount of work, the standard of work, yeah, the commitment. So we're back to what was always important, and that is, it's a two-way street. And we need each other in a symbiotic relationship for what is a good employer-employee setup.
Yeah. So, Katie, just on just a final note, as of today, which we're at the 27th of October, we were waiting, like you said, we were waiting for that big news on the 22nd of October to say what our guidelines would be. But in terms of what current guidelines are, they haven't changed from a workplace?
Yeah, so the guidelines continue to be that people should work from home unless where there are exceptional circumstances that require them not to. And clearly that will break down as it has over COVID to date sectorally. And there will be, of course, and there are returns to work, particularly in the private sector. Most of those returns to work that we have seen are of a hybrid nature. There has been consensus and consultation in terms of that model being the way forward in many organisations, a temporary way forward, not in the sense that employers are not embracing remote working, but a temporary move forward because it's a new arrangement for everybody. And I think that that makes a lot of sense, the suck it and see. Yeah. How is this working? Do we need to tweak it? What, you know, people may have certain views at the early stages about remote or not working remotely, and they may modify those views as they live with a hybrid working arrangement. So I think that that's sensible and reasonable that employers are setting up these facilities for returning workers. And they're also, in many organisations, supporting workers with any anxieties that they have in terms of return. And obviously this is going to be each case on its own merits. Individuals have been impacted differently by this pandemic. And again, the investment by employer organisations in their workforce in this regard, I think, demonstrates real genuine interest in their commitment. And I think that that's something that's acknowledged by certainly anybody I've been speaking to who have been supported, both within the remote working and then being supported in returning to work. And in many organisations, it's a gradual reorganisation. So easing somebody out of full remote working arrangements into a more hybrid working arrangement.
Yeah, and I think that's key, Katie. I would absolutely agree with you, is that most employers that I have spoken to and employees, they are trying to work together. It's a new thing for everybody. None of us have done this before.
Yes, absolutely. And people have to get used to, again, the workspace. And, it just takes a little bit of time for people to do that. But we're very adaptable, as we've shown when we had to adapt overnight in relation to the pandemic. And where people are well supported, they appear to be readapting to part remote working and part working on site.
Yeah, I totally agree. So, Katie, one of the things that that we use ourselves here in HR Locker, and it's one of the Adair HRM products, is Linea, in terms of finding out information in writing remote working policies or even just staying up to date with information. Is that a good place to go to in regards to getting the latest information?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the beauty of Linea, it's online, as you indicated, and it's developed and it's managed constantly to assist with the ever-changing space of HR. It is put together by myself and my colleagues who are at the coalface in terms of dealing with organisational queries in relation to a whole range of issues. It's also got good functionality in terms of being able to drill down quite simply into the particular niche issue that it is that you want to get access to. So we, under the banner of Linea, we provide comprehensive guidance on all aspects of employment law, so legislation, codes of practice, etc. We have employment related cases there. But we also have a toolkit in relation to the practical requirements of the HR facility. So whether it is organisational policies, correspondences, checklists, etc. We also have barometers there in terms of what's happening in the workspace, benchmarking, salaries, etc. So there is a treasure trove really of relevant accessible materials that I think any HR practitioner would be happy to access. As I say, probably the most attractive thing about it is the ease of access.
Katie, thank you so much for being with us today. What is the best way for people to get in contact with you?
Yeah, well, at adairhrm.ie, or we can be reached in our main office on 01561 3594.
Perfect. And we'll have all those contact details along with this podcast. So thanks again, Katie.
Lovely to speak with you, Crystal.
You too. Take care.
Thanks for listening. Check us out at hrlocker.com. The show was hosted by Christelle Wren and produced by Jenny Martin. Subscribe to catch the latest episodes on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you like to get your podcasts. If you'd like to feature, get in touch by emailing us at marketing@hrlocker.com. You can also follow HR Locker on Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn.